When we lived in Mississippi, we got to know one of the coaches at the local high school. Her name was Jenny McCullough, and Coach McCullough was coach of the girls' team. One time, when the team was playing one of their rivals, the score was not in the favor of Coach McCullough's team. In fact, within about the last minute of the game, they were down by 7 points. And it's at those moments that coaching skills and techniques and all those practices kind of need to culminate. But really, it's not so much that the coach, when a team is a varsity team and they've played for a long time and they've played a great game, it's not really then that the coach will tell them some new dazzling technique or give them some skill in a quick timeout or anything like that. It's really something that the coach can say to encourage the team. And in this particular game, as they were down by 7 with just about a minute or so to go, Coach McCullough called her team of girls to the side, and she told them that she was proud of them and that they were great players and that they were doing a great job. She says, but it's not in our favor right now. But I believe in this team, and I believe in your skills, and I believe in what you can do. And I also believe that you didn't come here tonight to get beat in your own gym. They won the game. Because you see, sometimes it's words that change us, motivate us, drive us to newer levels, comfort us, and bless us. We're going to look at some words that Jesus spoke in Mark chapter 5 today. I encourage you to turn to Mark chapter 5 as Jesus deals with a man named Jairus. And there are 3 instances as Jesus deals with this man, which we have recorded that he speaks to him. And each one of these instances is going to be the foundation of a point for us to develop as we think about the words that Jesus spoke to this man. And we're really going to develop this with a familiar scriptural concept of thinking of words of faith, number one, number two, words of hope, and number three, words of love. But our text is really set back in verse 22 of Mark chapter 5 when it says, "Behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name, and when he saw him, Jesus, he fell at his feet and begged him earnestly, saying, 'My little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her that she may be healed and she will live.' So Jesus went with him, and a great multitude followed him and thronged him." Now, let's get a little bit of the setting with this as we've read those few verses to think about Jairus being a ruler of the synagogue. He was an important, prominent person in that Jewish culture and society. And probably, most likely, if I'm kind of guessing, Jesus would not exactly be on the top of his number one list of people that he would want to really be associated with, because Jesus really stood so anti-establishment against men like Jairus. Men who were the rulers and men who were the directors and men who kind of dictated the thoughts and spirituality of the Jewish people in Jesus' day in those communities. But Jairus, well, maybe he was different in that respect, but maybe also when Jairus' family, you know, when it got personal, Jairus' daughter was sick, and he knew about Jesus, he'd obviously heard of him, and he humbled himself, and he forgot about his pride, and he forgot about all the people who might really look down upon him for doing this. Even if Jairus was wholesale sold out on Jesus and convinced that he was the Messiah, there still were a lot of people who were friends of Jairus that were not. And so he was going against the grain of popularity and going against the grain of all the things that made him who he was. And yet he humbled himself and he came to Jesus because his child is sick. And this is very personal to him. And he comes to Jesus begging him to heal his daughter, because apparently when he comes to Jesus, his daughter has not yet died. We know as you continue to read in the story that his daughter dies before Jesus is able to get over to Jairus' house. But he wants his daughter to be well. She's a little girl. The text tells us that she's only about 12. And he's, as any parent would be, extremely upset. He knows that she's probably going to die if she doesn't get well. And so all this about his position and his popularity, all of that's set aside so he can go to Jesus. But as you keep reading in the text, you'll see that there's a little bit of an interruption, you might say, along the way. The Bible tells us when you begin reading at verse 25 and you read all the way down through verse 34, that there is a lady who approaches Jesus in that crowd. Remember the last verse we read said that there was a multitude that was following Jesus over here to this house, and that they were thronging Jesus. Well, there's a lady among that crowd of people who has what some translations call an issue of blood. She has a hemorrhaging, she has a bleeding that simply will not stop. And she touches Jesus' garment, thinking that that will heal her. Jesus kind of stops everything, and he says, I need to know who touched me, because I perceive that power has gone out of me. Because the reason Jesus did that is so that the lady would ultimately know, not to embarrass her, but the lady would ultimately know that it was Jesus healed her, and not some superstition of touching, you know, the hem of his garment. And as you look at that text, and you see how that little episode is unfolding in this event, you must remember who's standing over here beside and observing all this. Jairus, whose daughter is back home, very sick. And he's desperately longing to get there and bring Jesus there to heal her. And so in the middle of all of this, bringing Jesus there, there's this big crowd. You know, but Jairus is, I'm sure, very quickly making his way home. And then Jesus stops all the crowd and he says, who touched me? And Jairus is thinking, who cares? You know, why? In fact, the disciples even say, Lord, how could we possibly know? Because there's so many people around you. And you know, how could we know this? And as the woman comes forth and she tells what happened and Jesus ultimately blesses her, Jairus is over here thinking, but my daughter, my child. But you see, then the story picks up from that point, and you begin reading at verse 35. While he, Jesus, was still speaking to the lady, some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house and said, your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said to the ruler of the synagogue, and this is our first point in just a moment, do not be afraid, only believe. And he permitted no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, and the brother of James. Then he came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue and saw a tumult with those who wept and wailed loudly. When he came in, he said to them, and here's the second sentence, why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping. And they ridiculed him or laughed him to scorn. But when he had put them all outside, he took the father and the mother and of the child and those who were with him and entered where the child was lying. Then he took the child by the hand and he said to her, Talitha cumi, which is translated, little girl, I say to you, arise. Immediately, the girl arose and walked, for she was 12 years of age, and they were overcome with great amazement. Three times in these last few verses we have read, Jesus, it's recorded, speaks, says something for the benefit of Jairus and his family. Three times we're going to examine these statements that we might make application to ourselves, and as I pointed out, words number one of faith, number two of hope, and number three of love. Word sentence number one, when you look back at verse 36, after Jairus hears the crushing news that his daughter has now passed away because of her sickness, Jesus says to him, "Do not be afraid, only believe." So point number one, as we think about this, words of Jesus, this is a word of faith. You see, this man had come to Jesus so that Jesus would heal his daughter who, when Jairus left the house, was still living. Barely, but very sick. Jairus knew if there was any hope at all left, it was in this man. But now he receives the news that no parent wants to hear, that his child is dead. And maybe partially in the back of his mind, he's thinking, you know, if we hadn't stopped for so long to deal with this other situation, maybe we could have got there before she died. Maybe he's thinking all kinds of things like that. There's no telling what kind of emotional roller coaster and turmoil that his mind is going through at this very moment. And the pain and the sorrow and the agony and the hurt. And Jesus says to him, "Do not be afraid, only believe." You see, belief had brought Jairus to Jesus at this point. But now he further says, "Don't be afraid. Have faith." Notice Jesus did not say, "You see, Jairus, I can handle this too." He didn't say, "I'm going to bring her back from the dead." He didn't elaborate. He didn't tell him, "Here's specifically what I'm going to do." He just said, "Have faith. Your faith has brought you this far, so far. Don't let go yet. Have faith. Do not be afraid, but believe that there is still something yet to come from you being with me and me being with you." And now there's no response from Jairus, except obviously that he keeps pressing forward with Jesus by his side. By this point, Jesus, kind of, verse 37, gets rid of the crowd ultimately as they approach the house. But there have probably been many times when you and I have had doubts. Circumstances have been such that we felt the crushing blow of all the agony and the problems of life. And just when we thought maybe the solution was forthcoming, just when we thought maybe things were going to get just a little better, they just get worse. You see, that's the kind of day that Jairus was having. It was a horrible day. His child was sick. He wanted her to be well. He had found Jesus and he was on the way. And maybe somewhere there's this hope that you know, things are going to get better. And then they just got worse. And you and I have all experienced circumstances like that where things are not going well and then they just get worse. And we find ourselves on the losing side of the equation. And we find ourselves feeling helpless, hopeless, and perhaps seriously questioning our faith or our relationship with God. Jesus says, "Do not be afraid. Only believe. Have faith. Even though the circumstances may seem stacked against us. Even though it may seem impossible, have faith." But then you notice, as we kind of make a transition here to the second point about a word of hope, that they arrive at the house in verse 38, and there was a tumult there of those who wept and wailed loudly. In the Jewish culture in the first century, and for many years prior to that and even after that, but during Jesus' day, it was not uncommon at all. In fact, it was quite the norm
for people to weep and wail at a house where there had been a death. Most people died at home. There were no hospitals, nursing homes, or facilities like that. Most people died at home. And they were often surrounded by their family and loved ones when they died. And the community, and the Jewish community was a close-knit, tight community in many ways. But they kind of, in solidarity, stood with one another in times of grief and sorrow. But there were traditions and customs that developed over the years as to how the Jewish people handled mourning on behalf of a family that experienced a death. Many of the Jews would show up. They weren't professionals, so to speak. They weren't hired to do this. But as the word got around that, you know, well, Jairus' daughter has died, a group of people would show up there for the express purpose to cry, to weep, to wail. I hesitate to say that it was theatrical, but it was somewhat that way. You may recall even at Lazarus' tomb in John 11. There were many people, it says, who were following Mary and Martha because Lazarus had died at home and he had been buried. And that they were weeping and wailing. And there were many customs connected with that, as to even how the family would react. And there was the Jewish customs, and even in the Jewish law, about the tearing of the garments, the rending of the clothes, the tearing of the hair, and the pulling out of hair, and just a big emotional weeping and wailing. It was a big boo-hoo fest, okay? I mean, it was quite a production. Well, that's what Jesus shows up to. It's not that he wasn't expecting. This happened at every house like this. And this is where he shows up. And then Jesus makes a second statement, which we're going to say are words of hope. Because, you know, Jairus, he hasn't seen his daughter yet. And the word he received was that she's dead. And she is dead. But Jesus comes up, and the second statement he makes is, why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping. I want you to notice the reaction of the mourners. Those people who supposedly were there to comfort and to somehow, some way encourage Jairus and his wife and the family. The next verse says that they ridiculed Jesus. The King James Version says they laughed him to scorn. I mean, that's why, you know, I say that maybe there was more theatrics to this than sincerity. Because here they are kind of, you know, doing their job, so to speak, and professionally mourning and weeping and wailing and advertising, you know, this is a house of sorrow. And then Jesus comes and says, oh no, she's not dead, she's asleep. And they ridicule him. I mean, how heartless can you be? How insulting was that to the family? I mean, really? It didn't bother Jesus. He wasn't hurt. He didn't leave. But really? I think I kind of understand why Jairus went to find Jesus instead of relying on folks like this now. But Jesus speaks the second word that we're going to call word of hope. She's not dead. She's just asleep. You know, that term sleep is used several times in the Bible in reference to death. In fact, in John 11, that I referred to a moment ago about Lazarus, John 11, verse 11, when Jesus tells his disciples about Lazarus, he says, "Our friend Lazarus is sleeping, and I go to wake him." But he was dead, undeniably. But Jesus said it was sleep. You see, the child of God really, essentially, never dies. Death is not the end. Death is not the finality or the last word for a child of God. It's just sleep. Something that you do for a little while, and then you'll wake from that refreshed and new. And I say this as a word of hope because, you know, by this point, Jairus and his family, you know, she's gone. She's no longer alive. But Jesus gives them hope. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, you hear these words in verse 13. 1 Thessalonians 4, 13. "I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, concerning those who have fallen asleep, lest you sorrow as those who have no hope." You see, 1 Thessalonians 4 is talking about people who have died. But there again, the terminology is used that they've fallen asleep. And don't sorrow like people who have no hope. Why? Because verse 14, "If we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so God will bring with Him those who sleep in Jesus." You see, there's a sleeping that's not permanent. It's sleeping in Jesus. And the Lord says here, this child is not dead. This is just temporary. I'm coming to wake her up. And we understand that there's a great waking up day for all the faithful children of God. 1 Corinthians 15. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 51. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 51. "Behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep." There's the word again. But he's talking about death. "We shall not all sleep, but we shall be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye. For the trumpet will sound, for the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. For when this corruptible has put on incorruption, and this mortal has put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is your sting? O Hades, where is your victory? The sting of death is sin, and the strength of sin is the law. But thanks be to God who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, inasmuch as you know that your work, your labor, is not in vain in the Lord." See that? That's the word of hope. Mark 5, 1 Thessalonians 4, 1 Corinthians 15. These are words of hope. And we must realize that when we are faced with sorrow, when we are faced with grief, when those that we love so dearly pass away, when they die, there's great comfort in knowing for the child of God, for the faithful Christian, they're not dead. They're just asleep. And Jesus Himself shall someday awake them. One day I will die. Not really. I'm just going to go to sleep. Jesus will wake me up. Words of hope. And then finally, words of love. Words of love. When Jesus then... Well, first of all, you notice verse 40, you know, after they had laughed him to scorn or they ridiculed him. I love what he did. He put them all outside. You know, he said, "There's the door, you can use it." And he said, "Get out." And he sent them all out. they would have got to see a great miracle. But instead, because they were such jerks, they got thrown out. And then this Jesus was the parents. Remember, Peter, James, and John are there. And Jesus speaks words of love. The Aramaic words are given in our Bibles, which are translated tenderly. Little girl, I say to you, arise. Words of love and power. But words that Jesus spoke in the presence of His disciples, but also in the presence of the parents. It was undeniable that this was supernatural. It was undeniable that the power of God had done this, but it was also undeniable when you look at the whole picture that this was the love of Jesus. You see, Jairus had approached this man and said, "My daughter's sick, can you come?" Jesus could have said, "I'm busy." Jesus could have said, "I've got other things to do than to travel down to your house for the sake of one person." But Jesus, because He loved all people, went to be with this family. And Jesus, because He loved that woman on the way, who seemingly interfered with this, spent time with her. An outcast, by the way, of society. But He loved her. And Jesus, because He continued to love Jairus and his family, and yes, this little girl, even after receiving the devastating news that the child is dead, trouble the master no longer. You know, you kind of get the impression almost that, like I mentioned a moment ago, Jairus had maybe gone against the grain of society, gone against the grain of his peers, gone against the wisdom of the Jewish aristocracy by seeking out Jesus. Notice how very quickly Jairus's servants want to dismiss Jesus. "She's dead. Just let him go." But not Jesus. Because He loves Jairus, even hearing this news, He stays with him. They come to the house. Jesus is ridiculed. You know, He could have got insulted and left. He could have been mad and left. No, He just made all the crew of mourners leave. He stayed. And these are powerful words of love. "Little girl, arise." Remember, she had been sick, and so she's not only brought back from the dead, but she's brought back without the disease that brought her death around. Because she gets up and she walks, and Jesus said, "Now give her something to eat." Words of faith, words of hope, and words of love. You know, we all need lessons like this. We all need to remember words of Jesus like this. We all need to remind ourselves just how much it is God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. We all need to remember that. Because this world is a tough, mean, old place. Satan wants nothing better than for us to be discouraged, to be involved in sin, to ultimately lose our souls. But we need to remember there is someone to have faith in. We need to remember there is someone to have hope in. We need to remember there is someone who loves us. And I hope you have had the best week, the last 7 days, that you've had in a long time. And I hope this next week will be just as great. But maybe you haven't. Maybe, just maybe, you've had one of the worst weeks you've ever had. Maybe, just maybe, you know there's some things coming up this next week or the next month or the next year that you'd really rather not face. You'd really rather just not deal with. Let me give you some faith, some hope, and some love. Let me tell you, you can do it. There may be less than a minute left on the clock, and you may be down by seven in your own gym. You can do it. You can win because Jesus loves you. Let me encourage you that way. And let me encourage you, if you have never given your life to Jesus Christ to become one of His, to believe the gospel today, to turn from your sins and turn to Him, be baptized in His name and added to His church and become His child and His follower so that you can have that faith and that hope and know and feel that love every day from this day forward. If you are subject, if you are in need, if we can pray for you and help you and bless you in any way, would you come this morning as we stand and we sing?